Looking for a podcast about the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian? Well, aha! This is the way! Here on Post Show Recaps, it's The Mandalorian Podcast. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by the return of the Jedi herself, LaTanya Starks, back in the house. LaTanya.
Hello.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I feel like I'm the human embodiment of that surprise bitch. That you thought you saw the last of me.
No way.
But yeah. So
LaTanya, welcome back. LaTanya is here. And of course, we couldn't do the finale without the man who owes me an egg sandwich, Kevin Mahadeo.
Kevin. I'm so mad. Oh, I'm so upset that I have to do this. I'm so upset. I will say my fiance is happy because she's like, what the hell are we going to do with two ostrich eggs?
Yeah, what were you going to do with two deviled ostrich? You were going to eat two deviled ostrich eggs, you psychopath?
I mean, yes, I would do it just to mock you.
Think of the impact on the ecosystem.
Think about the impact on the ecosystem of your body. And that you were going to eat two deviled ostrich eggs to the face to spite me? Who's the loser here?
And you would have had to record that. Like, that would have been something that we would have needed proof of.
Yeah, would have been, oh my God, that would have been like one of those like Yule time sitting by in front of a fireplace videos, like where there's no real sound except my eating the eggs.
ASMR. All right, well, I got to imagine this is the only Mandalorian podcast on yon internets that is beginning its finale coverage with nearly 2 minutes on eggs. So we're gonna get into
a very ovum-based season.
It really was. It was. Ovum would have been, I was going to say a name for Grogu, but no, probably not.
No.
He loves an egg.
Yeah.
We are going to get into everything that happened in this finale. Eventful, lots of emotions. I know conflicting emotions in certain regards, and I think a ton to unpack. Consider this area here your final spoiler warning. Don't listen. If you have somehow made it this far without watching The Mandalorian season 2 finale, if you are somehow like errantly walking into this podcast thinking that, oh, this is the one for the episode before the no, this is the finale one, and things happened and you want to watch it for yourself first, and I need to talk to you if you have avoided the spoilers and you're the person I'm talking to right now, and it's you, you're the one. How did you do it? I need to know. I want the secrets. Teach me. Take me under your wing. This is your last opportunity. I will give you a couple quick announcements before we continue. One is that while we are about to talk about the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian, this is not our final Mandalorian podcast of the season. We'll be back next week taking on your feedback, which we would love to receive from you. Yes, you, StarWars@postshowrecaps.com, or you can hit us up on the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. If you're not a member yet, you can sign up patreon.com/postshowrecaps. That's patreon.com/postshowrecaps or StarWars@postshowrecaps.com. We will be back next week doing a season wrap podcast about everything that happened in season 2, taking your feedback, having a great time. And then after that, I would recommend that you don't unsubscribe from the feed. I would recommend that you stick around. If you like Star Wars shenanigans, we may have some chicanery that you'll be interested in. Stay tuned. That's the tease. That's the spoiler warning. It's done. We're in it. Luke Skywalker. Let me just say those two words again real quick. Luke Skywalker. Allow me to say it a third time. Luke Skywalker. He's back. He came back and it was great and it was cool. And I'm telling you, it's always the mouth is the tell.
Yeah.
With the weird de-aging CGI stuff, it's the mouth.
I never see it, Josh. Josh always talks about the mouth.
It's the mouth.
I don't want to look at people's mouths that much. But
look at his mouth. It's the mouth. The mouth tells you that something is not correct, that something is wrong, that it is a fake, that it is a phony, that it's not real, but that doesn't mean it isn't obscenely cool. Obscene, I'm saying. Not insane, but that too. Obscenely cool. Luke Skywalker came back.
It's exciting. It's funny because
I did,
like,
not dare to dream.
I did dream because I feel like we talked about this on the podcast when we were theorizing who it could be, and you were like Mace Windu, and I'm like, get out of here. And
that would have been cool.
I was like, imagine Luke showing up, right? Like, imagine young Mark Hamill showing up, and it was. And this is the part I'm so conflicted. I'm so torn. I have so many feelings because, like, I'm just gonna unlock. I'll just like.
Yeah. Let's open the door right now. Why not start with Luke Skywalker?
I will open that door first and just be like, "Oh my god! Like, it's insane! It's insane the fact that they had Luke show up. That very much movie-esque, cinema-esque style thing where it's just like the lone X-wing comes in and it's just like, there's only one heart. X-wing. What could it possibly do? And then the Jedi just proceeds to wreck shop on the big threat that everyone was horrified about and just demolishes all of them in epic fashion.
That part
fashion.
Was wonderful.
Yeah, it's like
the quick dispatching of like these built up like death troopers.
Yeah.
He's just like, okay.
One sure. man versus the entire army of dark troopers. And we saw that just five of them were enough to kidnap baby Grogu. One of them was enough to nearly kill Din Djarin.
Yeah, my mistake. And then dark troopers.
And then someone shows up and kills like 3 dozen of them, dozen of them.
It's
single-handedly.
It's
literally
awesome.
Single-handedly. He just has the one.
I mean, that was the part too, right? Like the entire time, I'm like, oh my god, is it? And you see the green lightsaber, I'm like, is it? And you see the gloved hand, I'm like, it is. It's gotta be it.
When I saw the gloved hand, there was still a part of me that's like, it could be Mace Windu.
get out of here!
He did lose a hand. I definitely was just like, okay. Sweet little Grogu is starting to feel better about everything, right? Like he was all slumped down and now all of a sudden he's got like his ears perked. And because he knows that a Jedi is coming, he went to that stone and he reached out because I guess we know what that means now. And he connected with Luke Skywalker. Like that was the person that he connected with because he's so awesome was Luke Skywalker. And then all of a sudden he's just like, okay, we're cool. And then we as the audience get to watch him dispatch these machines with ease. And we're watching because all of the other characters are just as astounded as we are. And
they're watching
too. They're all watching. Like we are all witnessing.
Everyone's eyes are glued to the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a really cool way I thought that was done in a really cool way.
Totally agree.
It's very much too, we talked about this briefly where I love that scene in Rogue One with Vader where you're just like, oh, right, this is why we're like horrified of him. But in the same reverse, this is why we're in awe of someone like Luke. The Jedi, in my opinion, like this is what it should be, right? It should be like, you know, when Ahsoka showed up and like that like dangerousness. I think one of the things I really hate about the prequels as well is Attack of the Clones for so many reasons, but like the Jedi just get punked hard very easily by like some robots. And you're just like, I thought these were supposed to be like the badasses of the universe. And
they got fat and happy. They were taken unaware.
You get locked into politics.
Yes.
But then you see a scene like this, you see a scene like, you know, the Jedi episode and you're just like, right, this is what these guys are supposed to be. Like the ones that show up, you know, to save the day or to when they do, the bad guys start quaking in their boots. You saw Moff Gideon's face.
Fantastic.
So great.
Is that Luke Skywalker?
Everything that Moff Gideon did in this episode for me was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Moff Gideon
was just working.
I think I really misunderstood Moff Gideon. Moff Gideon's a freak.
No, he's just a freak. I can't swear on this show because my parents listen to it, but Moff Gideon's an F-boy. Like, that's what he is.
He really is.
He's just like, oh my God, I love all this stuff so much.
Yeah,
I have to collect all of it, and somehow I have money and backing, and I'm going to do it.
He's just drinking in the drama. He loves the drama.
Like, he got his... it's possible, I guess, if we're going to mention the word Darksaber this early. But it's part possible that he was holding back when he was fighting Din because he wanted Din to be the one to have possession of the Darksaber. But I don't know if that's the case. Like, he seemed like he was giving it his all during that fight, and he was getting rocked. And it was hilarious because he's an F-boy, and he can't do anything except order stuff online.
What I mean, like, internet troll come to life with the Darksaber. Like, what a, yeah. what a great twist that is, Moff Gideon, after all. I think that's wonderful.
It's so
Moff Gideon
great.
Is such a turd, and I love it. I love that. Great turn for the character.
Yeah, and it's also a great progression, because you think whenever you see Giancarlo Esposito that you yes. are getting Gus Fring. Right?
Yes, it's an escalate. He is, as casting, Giancarlo Esposito is shorthand for, like, here comes the boogeyman.
Right.
You know, here comes the nightmare. Like, how do you escalate past Werner Herzog, who's such astonishing casting in the first place, as, like, your first human bad guy on The Mandalorian? You bring in Gus Fring? Oh, shit. Like, what? Who could possibly top him? Well, they will be able to top him.
Yeah, apparently anyone who can do things.
Just leave it there.
But especially if you're, like, decked out in Beskar. So, like, you know, yeah. that was the proper suit, I guess, ultimately for Mando to have on. And he got to avenge his biggest L. Yeah. He got to, like, use a spear to, like, not die.
Yeah, yeah. So,
if anyone remembers Game of Thrones.
Exactly. Like, the spear worked out. It worked out this time. The helmet's good, too. See, this is why you properly equip yourself.
This is why you wear a helmet. You know?
Moff Gideon is watching the Luke Skywalker approach too, and his response is, like, the appropriate, like after all of, like, his chest puffed out, cock of the walk type stuff, he's like, oh shit, I gotta get out of here by any means
necessary. He's just like, we're all gonna die in here.
Yeah, I am not going up against Luke Skywalker. It's such shorthand, Kevin, for, like, the entire Luke Skywalker. And I know conflicting stuff, but, like, you got it.
Wait, is it? What's conflicting?
Conflicting stuff in the episode, and I think that there's definitely a take out there, and I think it's worth talking through that this is just, like, fan servicey, that it's just total fan service to have Luke Skywalker come back and everything, and it's Deus Ex Skywalker.
I mean,
like, I hear that. I would argue that, like, there is no one who makes more sense to come in this moment in the timeline that we're in The Mandalorian than Luke Skywalker. He's the guy. We're a couple years out at the most from the end of Return of the Jedi. He is still in that mode. He is still that guy. Grogu would reach out to Luke Skywalker. Makes sense for the Luke Skywalker journey. This is kind of a sweet note for the Luke Skywalker journey. To have studied at the knee of old Yoda, and now he's going to teach baby Yoda, is so sweet. I love that so much.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It's helpful for us that if we are ever going to surrender Grogu to a character that's not Mando, who could you trust more? And I know, Latanya, you have a lot of emotions of, he stole our baby! He stole our child. But, like, who are you going to trust to quote-unquote parent this kid other than Luke Skywalker, or more than Luke Skywalker?
No one.
I mean,
No one.
This is so now I have to head into places where, like, I'm super pumped. I love seeing Luke like this. I love this version of Luke. Let me correct anything. I love pretty much all versions of Luke, because I'm unabashedly a fan of The Last Jedi. But
I think Luke Skywalker is a character that in the main stuff, at least, I couldn't speak to anything else, but in the main stuff, I feel like they've never gotten him wrong.
Yeah, and I think this totally makes sense for the character. I think timeline-wise this worked. Is it Deus Ex Machina Jedi showing up? Sure, but that's sort of the...
But they, like, summoned him.
They summoned
a couple
him.
Episodes,
like,
back.
You summoned Luke Skywalker. It makes sense that he's the one that was reached to, because he is arguably the most powerful Jedi right now. So all of that tracks, and it tracks what we know about the mythology, right? Like, we know that Luke is currently trying to find Jedi. He's currently going to launch a school. We know all of this. This is the parts now where I'm going to close that door and open up the, like, what does this mean for the story part of it? Because we have a couple of things happening. One, I said this on episode, like, 2, I think, of the show, where I'm just like, if that baby is any sort of force enabled or has any sort of, like, Jedi-ness to him, there's possibly only one way this is ending, and it's bad, because we know what happens to Luke's school, and that is bad. So there's that aspect where, as much as, like, this is a, like, oh man, like, he found his people and, like, we get a cool Luke, I'm like, this is not gonna end well. Now,
we don't know that, though. Like, we don't know that, because
we don't know that
he could have left by then.
Yes,
he's already so strong with the Force, And he's just tiny. Like, he just needs someone to carry him around.
He could have just
tucked
away. He already survived what happened at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. Who's to say he's not going to... And that was Anakin Skywalker. You think Kylo Ren, who's the F-boy version of Darth Vader, is going to be the guy who gets Grogu? I don't think so.
Well, okay. Let's not crap on Kylo Ren. I know. Okay, this is going to be the time when everyone is like, what? I get it, right? I'm going to let Kevin finish first. Finish.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's like, yes, there's this is what I said.
Ahsoka Tano survived the Jedi Purge. You know, people survived the Jedi Purge from the prequels. Like, there's no reason that this automatically means
people
that Grogu dies.
Survived the Jedi Purge every day, Kevin.
Sure. And that could happen.
Every year that we do the Jedi Purge.
Sure, that could happen. That obviously then also, like, leads into, like, okay, well, you know, what does that moment mean in the bigger context of stuff? Is it as impactful if a bunch of people are, like, whatever. That's neither here nor there on this one. Like I said, that's one option. The other option is, of course, he does leave and he survives. So this leads to the other big question is, he ain't gonna leave next season. The next season is not going to start like, well, he was gone for 3 months and he's back now. Like, is there going to be a time jump when we get him? Is he now Team Grogu? Are they going the Guardians route and he's just going to, like, do that journey of the same thing Groot did? And if he's Team Grogu, yes, that could be really interesting. Can a show continue for a season without a Baby Yoda, without a Grogu? Because I don't think, like, I won't even say you have Mark Hamill for one. Because Mark Hamill will probably do it, and I think that's awesome. I'm glad that he's usually like, if it's available, I'm down to do it. The problem is that Mark Hamill looks like Mark Hamill now, and they had to do the, you know, deepfake/CGI to make him young. They cannot do that. As great budget as this has, I do not think they can do that.
Yeah,
with that
Kevin,
many episodes.
At a certain point, eventually, you will have to see the mouth.
I've seen the mouth. I don't see. Maybe it's because I've seen Justice League and I've seen the lip mustache.
Yes,
that
exactly.
No mouth ever again is affecting me anyway.
That's what I said to Josh actually when I was texting him. I was just like, "Well, at least it's better than mustache."
Yeah.
And then, but it is still not great. I grew up with a grandmother who's been hard of hearing since a childhood. So I talk really loudly all the time because that's how she could hear me. And I learned to lip read. So like I look at people's mouths and like put on closed captioning. And I'm sure that other people with accessibility issues do the same. And it's weird. Like when people look at that mouth, it's weird. It looks like those very cheaply done cutouts, like of the memes where people or the videos where people are just talking, you know, it's a different mouth. But, like, they haven't progressed much farther than, like, the people on YouTube creating things.
Yeah.
And, that, you know?
We haven't traversed past that uncanny valley.
Maybe everyone listening to this podcast, you know, if there's anyone who can reach out to these people and be like, we have the best mouth CGI technology.
Yeah.
Let's make some strides in mouth CGI.
But I think that...
Sentence I just said.
It was a beautiful sentence, and I'm glad that you said it. And I do just want to reiterate at this point that, like, CGI wonkiness for me fell all the way down into the abyss of the Sarlacc in contrast to how just, like, utterly jazzed I was by everything Luke Skywalker. And so I think that is a moment where, like, emotion and power of story and presence and iconography can trump something that's like a little bit funky. So like it's worth noting, but I really don't give much of a crap about it. But Kevin,
but you
continue.
You will during season three, if they focus on
him just hanging
around too much.
Yeah,
so,
no, yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
So then you have that issue, right? So again, like, so that was my specific fan of the Star Wars films was very excited to see Luke. My storyteller self is sort of like, okay, can this show survive without Baby Grogu? Are they going to do a time jump? What does the story become beyond this moment? And then if I shut that door and open my last door, my other one, which is probably going to be the most like complicated version of how I feel about this, is a huge issue I've had sort of with The Rise of Skywalker is obviously like how small it suddenly shrunk the Star Wars universe back down. Whereas The Last Jedi, I think, opened a door into a much bigger universe again. Return or Rise is just like, no, it's only these people that are important. It's only this. It's the Skywalker saga, a thing we have right. apparently always been calling it. Mm. Sure. So you have Luke show up.
Apparently always been calling it.
You have Luke show up and it's like, oh, right. Of course, he's running to school, but it's like, right. It's this universe again. It's this character. So the person, the fan who is a fan of the world of Star Wars is maybe not as jazzed just because it feels small again. Like when they announced all the new shows, when they talked about one that takes place in the High Republic in a time long ago where it's just like, oh my God, I won't have to hear the name Skywalker or God willing, Palpatine.
Oh, you're going to have to hear the name Palpatine. Yeah, you'll hear like, Palpatine for sure.
I would just be so
mad. Not even a question.
It would just make me want to just like, again, leave this universe because like there's a level to it where you want to be part of the universe. You want to see other parts of the universe. It's why Galaxy's Edge worked because it was a new place, a new thing. People aren't, you know, I guess there's fans like me who aren't just buying Luke's lightsaber. They're not buying Mace Windu's lightsaber. We were excited because we built our own lightsaber at Galaxy's Edge because we want to exist within that world and see a bigger context. But if everything is centered around literally two families, I guess, like it suddenly becomes less. A galaxy doesn't become a galaxy anymore. It becomes a literal pinpoint. So that part of it, that last part is where I'm super, super conflicted by because I'm excited as a fan of Star Wars because that moment is really great. It's really awesome. But also it goes into the limiting aspect where it's just like this world feels really small again. The Mando was trying to show us a little bit of new places in season one. And I will say probably my biggest criticism of season two is that it just felt like part of the other Star Wars again. And we're just seeing the stuff we've always seen.
And I think that depends on how it hits you, because for me, like I have felt for just about the entirety of the season, not always, but more often than not, that at least a lot of this is threaded through like Mando being an outsider who really only gives a shit about one thing, and that's the kid, and how he's experiencing all of these pieces of mythology and lore as just sort of like givens. And one of the things that I really like about and we'll get into the Darksaber stuff, and I know that there's, you know, disagreements over whether or not we like him having the Darksaber.
We'll get there.
Sure, of course. But I mean, like, to get there, like, one of the things that him possessing the Darksaber right now means is that he is the heir to Mandalore, that he is king of all Mandalorians right now. And I'm fine with that.
You're fine with that?
Thank you.
A woman has been working for that for years.
I'm fine with that in a certain context.
I just wanted to check.
Is it the context of trite, lazy storytelling? Because sure.
Whoa. That is not what
I went there. Shots are being fired, but I'll take back the shots. We'll get to there later.
I think it's an interesting development for the character who knows absolutely jack shit about any of this and doesn't seem to care about any of it to now suddenly have this voice upon him. And he's like, take it. Just take the thing. I've got an amazingly cool Beskar spear. And she's like, no, I can't. It's the story. Frickin' Gideon is right about that. And I think that that's an interesting dilemma. Do I want him to be king of Mandalore forever? Absolutely not. Do I think that it's a good resting point for him? Absolutely not. But as him being like kind of like a traveler through mythology, I think that that's fascinating to me. And so now he is a traveler through this deep piece of Mandalorian mythology right now. And I think that his like very like his casual, like I hesitate to say it because it's not exactly accurate, but like his sort of casual encounter with Luke Skywalker, like it wasn't about Luke Skywalker for him. It's about a guy who would be worthy to protect his son. A guy who would be worthy. This is the person he's been looking for. This is the Jedi he's been looking for. Not to mention, by the way, we got to see R2-D2. I do believe I called that at one point in time. I do want to just take a quick flex on that.
Josh,
just a quick moment where I just
settle
go,
down. You've won lots of things. We get it.
You have a lot today. Okay.
You are Victorian. Congratulations.
I feel great. I think that it's the lore piece of it. I think that it's been really consistently done all along the way that Mandalorian is like Mando himself, Din Djarin, seems pretty unimpressed by everybody. You know, like they're all just humans or aliens or whatever to him. And so threaded through that experience, that's been totally fine. I have a really hard time imagining that season 3 of The Mandalorian is going to have a major Luke Skywalker component. I think that they would have probably gone the recasting route if that was going to be the way to do it. Sebastian Stan is right over there.
I literally was like, is that actually Mark Hamill or is that Sebastian Stan?
He's just off camera.
We've been in lockdown together.
Yeah, we've been quarantining together.
Tell him
cool.
I say hi.
He's great. He's a really cool dude.
I agree.
But I do think then to that point, is Grogu going to be in Mandalorian season 3? Maybe not a lot. And maybe the last couple of episodes have been kind of training us to consider what the show would be like without him. And whether or not you like that is a totally valid thing to debate.
Yeah.
But I also think based on this Disney Plus announcement that we had the other week of all of the different shows, and certainly a couple of shows that exist within the timeline of The Mandalorian, there is, and I, again, your mileage may very well vary, and that is totally fine. There are other shots for Grogu to turn up. There are other places for him to go than just The Mandalorian, as we are creating a cinematic universe, building towards a story event. So, we have not seen the last of Baby Yoda by any stretch of the imagination. Have we seen the last of him on Mando at least for a minute? Maybe. Have we seen the last of Din Djarin on Mando for a minute? Is a possibility because of this whole Book of Boba Fett thing, which we're not saying until about a half hour into this. There's some confusion right now as to whether or not Book of Boba Fett is its own spinoff or it's season 3 of The Mandalorian. Disney, as of this recording, has not officially said one way or the other.
They haven't clarified, but it's all speculative on our part. For season 3, possible release dates for both shows. Both for season 3 of
That's
The Mandalorian and for Book of Boba Fett.
Oh boy, do I not want season 3 of The Mandalorian to suddenly become...
What is this?
The Halloween series? You're in the third movie and now you decide to be like, we're going to just do something else entirely different. That worked out so well.
Season of the Witch.
I mean, it worked out well for Halloween. It still keeps working out
it worked out in the long run. They have to go an entire movie and lose money before they're like, ooh, spin it back around.
Josh, I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, though. I do.
I don't know. A lot of words soup for me. I give the mic over to whoever would like to take
it.
You're winning it from me in battle, though.
Yeah, I would like to say a thing. So to Kevin's point, just about Luke Skywalker appearing and like who would have been, you know, the most appropriate Jedi, I guess, during that time frame to do so. I would also say that we need to add, like, you know, you mentioned that Mark Hamill's down to do anything, and that's because Mark Hamill was not happy necessarily with his character and what happened in the Last Jedi, even though I thought it was a perfect ending and I loved The Last Jedi. He was less than pleased. So, like, even though it's TV and, you know, we're all like, you know, we're all at home now at this point, so there's really no distinction between event television and like giant movies because we're watching them all on screens at our home. But like, you know, if he has the opportunity in a show that's going well in his second season to like do something that's going to extend the legacy and make it more positive as far as his backstory goes, I think that Mark Hamill's always going to jump at that possibility. I will say that when the episode ended, as conflicted as I was about, you know, it being Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker that showed up, just because of the baggage of Star Wars, of things of the past, and, you know, bringing that back to bear. Not to mention that Luke took my damn baby. Like, I mean, I just have to say that. Like, yes, he's great and I love him, but he took my baby. So he better be on his best behavior. And train him very well and give him lots of, you know, I guess fish he likes, eggs. But I love eggs. Yeah. But this unlocked so many emotions in me that I think this episode, despite its, you know, the amount of things that we're going to say about it and have already said about it, I think that this episode was the moment that I fell in love with Star Wars. I know everyone else has an origin story for Star Wars, which starts as being a young kid. And a lot of the movies were shown in my house. And we were excited about Billy Dee Williams and his pompadour and all of that. And, you know, after that, we I didn't especially deeply connect to the story or deeply connect to the character. So I've kind of been, for a lot of reasons, like an outcast in terms of just general society, because like everyone loves Star Wars and has their favorite Star Wars thing. And I've never felt that way. But yeah, I just was excited. Finally, so excited for the latest trilogy of movies when I saw the trailer for The Force Awakens. And that movie was led by a woman. And there was John Boyega and there was Oscar Isaac. And the villain was Adam frickin' Driver. And I understand that you all might think he's an F-boy of the highest order, but I love Adam Driver so much that I watched every season of Girls. Like, that's a thing that I did.
I did, too.
Yeah, but it's different for me. trust me. So imagine my pain is what I'm saying. Anyway, yes. Then J.J. Abrams destroyed my dreams. But thankfully, I had two episodes of the first season of The Mandalorian left to watch after I saw the final movie and the most recent trilogy. And The Mandalorian was right there. It did not disappoint me, and neither did this finale. So I think you should mark Friday, December 18th, the year of our Lord, 2020, during a damn panna cotta, as the time that LaTanya Starks officially became a Star Wars fan. And as of last night, I have started my watch of Clone Wars.
Yes.
So this is happening. So it's still me, though, and I'm going to have some major questions and comments and concerns. So I'm sorry if I bruise your inner child when I talk about things, but you'll be okay. You're resilient.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll be fine. I'm sure we'll be fine. Yeah. I think that it's a lot of things. And for me, this year has been so horrible. This year has been so horrible.
Yeah.
For so many reasons. It has just been awful on like global levels and then on personal ones for so many people. For like so like even attempt to sort through all of that.
Targeted attacks. You know my theory.
Yeah.
Kevin, have I told you this theory?
I don't think so.
So I think that 2020, like its entire purpose of 2020 was targeted effery, right? Just targeted attacks. So when things happened in 2020, you know, there's all the big stuff that like is happening so quickly that you have no control over, like the world of politics or things like that, or the fact that like Black people don't matter apparently, and we're just going to hurt LGBTQ plus people. When you get rid of all of that, something will happen to you that hits you like in your soul, like something you were preparing to do or something that you were like very excited about. And then you'll find out it was destroyed in like the most terrible way, and you'll find it out at the worst possible time. So I think that the purpose of this year was just like targeted attacks, just like every individual had things that they had to be like that they felt deeply.
It's been
strongly about, plus the landscape.
Yeah. It's just been,
I thought there was going to be some good coming out of that statement.
No, not really.
Sorry.
Not really.
Talking it's about been a, 2020.
It's true. It's been awful. It ended exactly the way that's in spirit with the year. Like friendships have been ruined, you know, like important things have happened. It's been tough. And I don't know, for me, all of these like kind of future concerns are valid in terms of like franchise wide concerns. I think for me, the resonant thing, and it hasn't gone away, is like Return of the Jedi was that movie for me that you're talking about, LaTanya, that people had those moments when they were kids. And like Return of the Jedi is like an early movie that I remember watching as like, this is the pre-Terminator 2 stuff for me. And so like, this was the first Star Wars movie I ever saw, was Return of the Jedi. And it was a movie that I watched a lot, and I just thought like I had none of the context of Luke Skywalker being sort of a dope from A New Hope and everything, and just being like a little bit of a turd. My first impression was like, this is the person who can solve it all. And this is a person who's like deeply conflicted. And this is a person who has a lot going on, but can overcome that and save the day. He was a hero to me. And that does not negate even a little bit for me of being 100% pro Luke Skywalker Last Jedi appearance. I think what that movie did with him is beautiful, and I love it, and I'm unapologetic about that. I know your tastes may vary out there, but to be in this trash year and to sign on to Disney Plus on a Friday morning without encountering the internet whatsoever and watching Luke Skywalker wreck shit and then show up as just like this very self-confident version of himself, I did not understand how badly I needed the Return of the Jedi this year. And so that remains my predominant feeling about it. I think that all of like the future considerations are totally valid. And if it's triggering for you in terms of like the constricting of the Star Wars universe, I get that. I'm not there yet. I need to find out what they're going to do. Are they going to attempt a weekly de-aged Mark Hamill? I think it's a mistake. I think that was a trick. You could probably just use the one time until we get things a little bit tighter. But that feeling that happened for me on that same day you're talking about is just like I haven't felt joy that way this year in a long time. I think as far as like the future of Luke, Kevin, just really quickly, is Mark Hamill is like one of the most gifted voice actors of all time. And the animated stuff is such an essential part of the Star Wars universe that I think it's in the practical consideration, it's money left on the table, but it's also just like such a big whiff of a story opportunity to not give us some sort of like Clone Warsification of Luke and the Jedi Academy at some point. And I feel like that door, that's the one that I would travel through most readily as far as like Luke's continuing adventures.
Yeah. And I would be, you know, again, I would be down. Look, I need to reiterate, like, as a fan of Star Wars and a lot of the stuff that has been done, I was very excited to see Luke. I was literally shouting, like, you know, profanity coming, like, holy shit. Like the moment, like every second that it was happening, I was like losing my mind. And I'm extremely excited for that. Like, I was happy about that. But I also have to be aware of the other aspects of the series. You know, like I try to look at stuff from those multiple perspectives. So like as a fan, and was it fan service-y? Sure. But honestly, I didn't care that much about that part of it. But when I think about it in terms of like me personally, and again, the idea of the feeling the Star Wars universe a little bit smaller, that does hit me in terms of like the Jedi. I'm really pumped about the, Ahsoka show, because like that's going to be something else entirely, I feel like. So I'll get a taste of the Jedi outside of the same character that I've known. And again, what does it mean about the school and Baby Yoda's future? So like those are questions that I'm gonna ask and ponder. And like, it is really cool to see Luke. It was awesome. But on the other, you know, smaller aspects, that does stick in my mind. Like I said, it's a complicated feeling. I'm not saying I dislike it. I'm just saying
It's not a bad take, like, or something to be apologetic about. It's
yes, agreed.
The exact thing that we love about The Last Jedi is the reason that we're conflicted about Luke showing up, right?
Yes.
Is that the idea that anyone might be able to accomplish what Luke Skywalker did, and they don't have to look like him, right? Like, maybe they're black. Maybe they're Indian. Like, who knows? But when you bring it back to, you know, the Luke Skywalker, there's not a lot of ways to be a part of that lineage. He was, you know, he was just conceived immaculately. Oh, no, that was his dad. His dad, sorry.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, but like, so ultimately I'm still right. It was immaculate. those prequels. Anyway, like, he's just so iconic, and we get it, but like, the only way to be a part of that family is to be like adopted in, maybe, or like, you know, some other more nefarious thing happened in the past. So like, we just want there to be more to this universe than, you know, the two white guys who are running the show going back to their favorite thing in the world. And that doesn't take away from, or shouldn't, I don't think, take away from the enjoyment of every other white man that I know who is above the age of 22 who just immediately contacted me and was like, tell me how to feel.
Is that your job? Is that your job apparently?
It's not my job. And I didn't do it. That's what this podcast is for, if you want to know what I think. I just think that is the subtext of what Kevin is eloquently saying, but I'm just going to go out and say it. Like, you know, there's an issue. This is a Disney property. We get dollops of diversity. I haven't heard Naomi Ackie's name and I don't know how long. Right. So, yeah, like I said, I became a true Star Wars fan. I'm about to consume a ridiculous amount of like back catalog. And that's something I normally don't do with the show, or shows in this, you know, there's like novels. They're going to make me read. So like, you know, I just like to see someone who looks like me or who is actually like, you know, super dark skinned instead. And like doing their thing and like, you know, we follow them and find out how they became a Jedi and why they're worthy. We need more than just cis white guys to be worthy.
I think you definitely nailed what I'm trying to go for. And I think the part of it that is still the extension for me is that, like, honestly, if this appearance of Luke is great, it totally makes sense for the characters, totally makes sense for where this story is going for the Jedi and opening the Academy and his journey as a character. And I love that. Again, all of that I loved, right? I loved him showing up being the badass because this is who he was. This is the Luke that I, like Josh, Return was my favorite. I, you know, was so excited of this version of the character, like this badass version of the character to show up here and where he's going to go. And if it all led to the end of The Last Jedi, it would have been fine. It would have been happy. It would have been great. But maybe it is because, like, knowing this now, it just once again reminded me of where it all ends and that ending and how terrible it is. Yeah. And that's sort of maybe what it is subconsciously. Maybe that's where the conflict about this particular part is coming from. Because, like, honestly, yeah, like, if this was all ending with the idea of The Last Jedi and that's the culmination of the story and then we would have had something else after Rise and it opened up that world and everything, awesome. And, like, I agree. Like, we don't get a lot of diversity. It would be cool to see... Again, other Jedi, right? Like, just other, we've only, this is a cool, cool group of people that I, like, want to have a lightsaber, and I want to have the Force, and I want to do cool shit. It's a cool, dope set of, like, if you're, like, in D&D, it's a dope class, but I can't imagine can you imagine if there's a D&D game, and, like, in the world, they're like, well, there's three. There's only, in the world, you can only have three barbarians, and those three spots have been taken, so we can't have any more barbarians, guys. I'm sorry. You cannot create a barbarian character anymore. The three are it.
Like, but at the same time, this still worked for the show.
It does.
And
it does.
Still again. Worked for me. Like, and it was a pure appeal to emotion and not logic. It worked. Like, every one of us was screaming and like, I cried instantly.
I was screaming out loud. Emily was in the shower and she's like, is he talking to me? I was not.
Yeah. Emily was like, Josh was screaming the other day.
I was screaming. I was going, I think it's Luke. I think that's Luke Skywalker. Are they going for it? They did it. There was a lot of that. It was a lot. It got really, really loud.
Yeah. Over here. And I agree, LaTanya. It does work for the show. It does work for the show. Like, full stop, it works for the show. It makes sense. The ramifications for the show, I will worry about, right? Like, can the show do without Grogu? Like, those are questions about the show, but in the context of the show, it absolutely works. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's a personal thing. It's just a broader Star Wars thing of what it made me think about after the fact. Beyond the like excitement and cheering, you know, my brain also went to these areas. I also thought about like how, you know, I really want to see other aliens, you know, like along with just like different races. I'm just like, I want to see someone who looks like me, sure, but give me some more Mon Calamari. Give me some Nautilin. Give me some like weird races that we're not seeing enough of as well. I mean, I guess it just reminded me of that, of like, Star Wars is so big. Can I get some more of that other stuff too? You know, I don't know.
This is literally only the third Yoda we've seen.
Yes. Yeah. No, second.
No, Yaddle.
No, second.
Yaddle erasure.
How dare you?
Yaddle erasure.
How dare you?
It's the hair. I can't deal with it. I just, I cannot deal with it.
Well, you know, if you're looking for, you know, a lot of like alien Jedi, I would point you towards Clone Wars, Kevin. There's a badass Mon Calamari Jedi.
That's pretty cool. Actually. Yeah.
He's great.
He's delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. No spoilers, but yeah. Can we shift gears a little bit, because there is something else that I think we really need to dig into, and it's the post credits scene, and it's as excited as I was to see the return of Luke Skywalker, just the utter disrespect for Bib Fortuna. they blew him up. They shot him right in the throat thing, and that was it. And that's what you do. You make me wait 30 years for the return of Bib Fortuna, and you just shoot him right. I didn't really care. I mean, it was
the Twi'lek did get free. What? Can we talk about that Twi'lek who finally got free?
Like, yes, thank God.
Good.
Justice.
Dealing
justice
with that garbage for so long.
You know what I think would be justice is if Ming-Na Wen was in charge.
I know.
Because Ming-Na Wen is amazing. And she was the voice for Mulan, right?
Yes.
Am I wrong about that? Okay. She's literally a Disney princess. And she kicks so much ass. Like, we have to, at some point, talk about the team up of the women and the plan, the quote-unquote plan, which was so bad. Like, it sounded... The plan did... I was just like, this is it? This is what we're doing? I can't believe it worked.
Yeah.
But
sort of worked, right?
Yeah, it actually trapped them in a place. Yeah, it failed. It was a bad plan, but yeah. At least they had a plan. They came together and they had the scene almost like identically to the Game of Thrones, like power scene where all of the women were around, in a circle, like looking at a map and like figuring out their game plan. It did not go well, but. On this show, they did it right. Even though the plan was ridiculous, like these women were kicking all of the ass. And like the first thing that happened when Mando and Boba Fett meet Bo-Katan, and I am terrible at what is her companion's name?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay, that's the thing. So like we need to know who this black woman is. I believe she's a wrestler as well. So like their fight was fantastic. The women just kicked all the butt in this episode, and it would also be nice if, like, the tale of Boba Fett ended with him, like, killing that guy that I honestly don't know who he is yet.
Bib Fortuna.
Oh, sorry. Bib Fortuna.
Yeah.
And, again, sounds delicious. And
no, I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think so.
And then being like, ma'am, your throne, because she deserves it. I think she deserves it. She was literally dead.
Koska Reeves is the character.
Thank you so much. I knew that you'd Google faster than me.
Mercedes Varnado, a.k.a. Sasha Banks.
Sasha Banks is great.
Yes. That was Sasha Banks?
That's Sasha Banks. I'm saying.
I didn't even recognize her this entire time.
Exactly.
Wild.
Sasha Banks.
She's great.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot to keep track of and a lot to be excited about.
There's a lot going on. And then, you know, I'm excited about having Bo-Katan and what is her name again? What are the character's name?
Koska Reeves.
I want them around. It seems like Mando pretty much always tends to do well with like, teaming up with a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just cool with it and like, okay, cool. Obviously you can fight. Let's do this. So I think it would be really cool to see what having the Darksaber and technically, as you said earlier, being the, you know, person who is now the King of Mandalore when he literally doesn't want it because, you know, if you don't want it, that means you're the best leader, apparently.
I'm glad you said it. I was waiting for it, but I'm glad you pulled it out.
Yeah. It's interesting what all of these women are going to do. Like, I'm excited about this. And I've seen Katie Sackhoff in horror movies, and she's terrifying, so I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I'm pumped for her, too.
I also love that moment, and it took me, and I think I didn't realize until, I don't even, like, at least over halfway, like, maybe two-thirds, like, it was well into the episode before I was just like, oh, hey, they're doing the, like, A-Force Avengers thing, except way better, because it was more subtle and felt natural and didn't, like, come out to be like, oh, yes, we see what you're doing here.
I love how they leaned into the jetpacks. That was so smart.
Yes, like using them to flip.
Yeah, that was
really cool.
Yeah,
that was cool.
It was such a cool moment. And like, I think that's what made it so effective, too, in my opinion, is that it felt natural, right? Like, you had these female characters teaming up for, I mean, yes, a bad plan, but, like, in a totally badass way and, like, doing cool stuff. And it felt natural. It didn't feel like it was, like, one of those moments to be like, we're trying to do, you know, the, like, God, I hate using this term, but, like, the girl power thing. It was awesome, and it was cool, and it was natural. And I loved how that did stick out to me and just reminded me of the opposite way of doing it, which I felt was not as good.
The scene even made, like, this episode even, like, made me forget that Karen Dune was there. And then when she was, I was like, great. Yeah, please protect Ming-Na. Good job.
Yeah. I did like the standoff at the start of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So much happened in this episode, y'all.
Yeah.
Like, that standoff was great.
Yeah.
It's impossible to cover.
It's a lot. There's a lot going on. I need to get us back to Boba Fett. People are going to get really upset if we don't talk about Boba Fett in a meaningful way before the first hour is up. We have to do it. Let's take a quick break. Do a quick commercial break. This is a good time for a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll talk Boba Fett. Okay, Boba Fett, where is that what you're saying? Well, hey, he's here. We're talking about him. We're going to talk about Boba Fett, Book of Boba Fett. If it's a third season of The Mandalorian versus its own show, I'm sure that makes a big difference in terms of how you receive it. Let us assume it is its own show. I think it is probably a pretty safe assumption. I just want to point out that, like, as of this recording, we don't officially know. We do not officially know. The story of Mando and Grogu felt pretty rock solidly finished. And I can imagine the world in which the Mandalorian shifts away from Din Djarin in season 3. But who knows? We don't know. We do know that we are getting the Book of Boba Fett in some capacity. Does this excite us after what we got from Boba Fett? Or are we this season? Or are we like, ugh? Because I'm excited. I want to see it. I'm excited for more Boba Fett. I'll say that. I'll start. I don't have much more to add other than that. Let me see what that's all about. I want to check that out.
Yeah, I'd be down for it. I like the idea of them showing up. Capping Bib Fortuna right in the face, basically.
Yeah.
And then freeing. I really wish I knew that Twi'lek's name too. That poor Twi'lek, who has had to endure a lot of just bad stuff, having to deal with Jabba the Hutt for so long, and then clearly Bib Fortuna. So the idea of, I guess, Boba Fett as like a mob leader, a gang leader, if we're going to have like a Wire-esque almost.
You just have to say it on a podcast. I have to say it out loud. Jabba Fett just feels good.
I've missed being here.
Yeah,
well, just like,
welcome back, friend.
Josh making a ridiculous statement, and then Kevin's face just being
welcome
like,
back.
"This happened.
Welcome
this
back.
Is a
that
thing
happened.
That my best friend did."
Yeah.
I'm his best friend. He's not my best friend.
Whoa! Wow. I did not mean to delve into the psychology of this friendship. I will stop.
I'm upset and hurt.
Wow.
And I don't want to really, want to talk about it anymore because I actually am that grievously wounded.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry, Josh.
Okay. Hey, what you were going to say. Get back on track, sir.
Yeah, I think Boba Fett is what we were talking about and whether or not he should have a spinoff show. And I guess that depends on how you felt about Boba Fett being in The Mandalorian this season, right? Like, apparently lots of people were excited by it. And they're making this show. As a reflection of that, people wanted to know what happened to him and whether he actually survived the Sarlacc pit. And people wanted to know like how he had the armor and all that stuff. It was a lot. There was a lot that was going on there that like a very kind of almost specific sect of people at first wanted, I feel. And then he was introduced, his character was reintroduced on this show, and we saw how proficient he was. I think that's the thing. It's like he is proficient in ass kicking, which is great. And now his sidekick is Ming-Na Wen. So
partner. Let's say partner.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say partner, but I don't know yet. I'm not sure if their relationship is mutually equal. That's the thing. And I think that people cast women as sidekicks in things like this. So, yeah, I'd like to say partner. Very much in crime, because they've committed a lot of crimes.
So many crimes. An outstanding amount of crimes have been
so committed. Many torts.
Yeah, lots oh,
they
of
have, they have feased
Boba Fett intergalactic tortfeasor. very well known. I'm excited for it. I think, you know, one of the things that we talked about at the end of the first recap of this season was this idea of like if you're gonna bring back the specter of Boba Fett, like if you're actually gonna do this, and I know that like at the time we were like a little bit like, I don't know, like can you at least like prove like that this is a character who was like worth the hype? Like, you know, instead of just being like a cool action figure, can you tell us who he is without the armor? And they did. And now they're also, they've told us who he is with the armor. And I think that, especially the fact that, Temuera Morrison is just really, really, really fun, in Ooh. This role. And I think not to be unmentioned, I think very important to mention that the news of the Book of Boba Fett comes, just a day after the passing of Jeremy Bullock, yes. who played Boba Fett in the movies initially. So kind of powerful in that way. I'm excited for it. I don't know what form it's going to take. That will matter to me to some degree. But it's exciting to know that like it's coming pretty soon. It's surprising that they were able to keep a lid on that, let alone the Luke Skywalker thing, but they kept the lid on like revealing an actual show that's coming up when they just had like the Disney Investor Day. They just like kept that as a secret.
The amount of NDAs that have been signed.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
You know,
some lawyers have been very busy.
Pretty wild. And also like if the Book of Boba Fett taking place on Tatooine, and we know that there's somebody else who'd been kicking around Tatooine wearing Boba Fett's armor for a minute, if that glides us back towards Timothy Oliphant showing up, and especially if like now like the criminal situation is getting worse here on Tatooine, and if Cobb Vanth and like his new best friends of the Tusken people start riding up to Jabba's palace to like take him out, yeah, I want that. I would like
you need that.
I need that.
That's what, okay. I think this will be their gritty crime drama
cool
kind of show, right?
Yeah.
So that sounds cool. Like you know of him, like he and his partner, like ruling, but then avenging, and then going back to ruling. And we meet some people along the way.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big thing that goes down with a group of people that they like, and they have to like figure out how to fix it. Yeah. I'm all good with like a procedural crime drama that just happens to include Star Wars characters. Are you kidding? Like, yes.
In the Tatooine justice system, there is no loss.
Do I need to do the Law and Order theme song again?
Because I will. Blaster fire, right?
Okay.
No, I'm not doing it. Figret Dan in the mobile mode covering the Law and Order theme song. Sorry, we're keeping it in the Jabba's palace realm. It could be Max Rebo. I'm sorry, Max Rebo erasure. My bad.
For the people who are wondering at home what Kevin was doing during that musical interlude, he was playing an air flute.
Yeah. Pretty well, I should say. Like, he's a deft air flute player.
Yeah. Little known fact, I did air flute that accompaniment to the Law and Order theme song.
Yeah,
that's the least known fact.
that was really, really great. I was impressed. All right, so Boba Fett, we'll talk about more Boba Fett next week when we do the finale feedback and everything. Darksaber stuff. Just Kevin, just go off. Yeah. Just do what you got to do.
It's not even just going off. It's just, you know, the Baby Yoda stuff I thought was really interesting and really cool. Yes, it is also like, you know, lone samurai / gunslinger with a young child he has to raise is a thing that exists in fiction, but it doesn't exist a ton necessarily. We've seen it every now and then. We've seen it in different genres. So I wasn't like so like, oh, this is just a cliche. Like I thought it was really well done. But the narrative of, oh man, this character that doesn't want to lead accidentally stumbles into a situation where he might have to lead, and he either has to learn that he is the ruler this place needs, or he's not the ruler that they really need, and someone else will take over, and he'll rescind the throne, is so just overdone and overwrought and such a cliched, trite, like, mechanism. That to see it here, I'm like, I don't give a crap about seeing this again. The only time that I thought it was interesting was in the first season of Game of Thrones. And when I read the book for the first time, even way before that, because I thought that's what they're headed with this. In the first book, when they introduced Ned Stark as a character, I was like, oh, they're going to do the thing where like he doesn't want to be the hand, but then he has to learn that, oh, maybe he has to end up ruling not by choice and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. No, plot twist. Unfortunately, I don't think Din Djarin is going the way of Jango Fett in the end, in season three in any way. And,
did you say unfortunately? Like, are you wishing death on Din Djarin
in order to make this any sort of interesting to me?
Now I feel attacked. Don't wish death upon Din Djarin.
He does have previous traumas with his head. So
it's just like he must die.
Leave Pedro Pascal's head alone. He just felt comfortable enough to show us his face.
Yeah, and it's
a beautiful face.
Beautiful, beautiful face.
And that mustache.
He didn't have a mustache this time.
He trimmed it down. Did you notice that his mustache got trimmed?
He made it. He clearly, like, you know,
He shaved earlier in the day. He shaved before the assault.
Yeah. He had to. He had to get ready for business.
Yeah. So like that's my major issue here. It's just a storyline that's so overdone, and to the hat, like there's also just a part of me, and this sounds super weird, I'm tired of characters who just end up like, I'm special. And it's just like, what was interesting about Mando is that he was just kind of stumbling through the universe, trying to just take care of this kid, ending up in weirdo situations. And I was just like, I guess I'm dealing with this today. And now it's like, well, you have the sword, so you are the rightful ruler of Mandalore and the people, so therefore we must do this storyline where you're special now and you must learn. And it's like, no! Just have him be the weirdo side character who's stumbling into this. Like, he could have, like, owned Bo-Katan, and now he has to go with them to help with that, because, like, that's part of his, like, people, and he's trying to deal with that part of it, as opposed to, like, well, he's the rightful ruler, that's how we get him involved in the story.
Think about how hilarious it would be if you tried to, like, make Mando the king of Mandalore.
You'd be such a shit king. It'd be great.
Yeah, but this isn't a comedy, right? Like, it's like, that's like
there's a lot of times that we laugh during the show, I feel. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and a lot of them are at Din's expense.
But doesn't it then become like, if you make that part of it into a comedy, I feel like it does downplay then Bo-Katan trying to become the leader that those people really do need, and try to like have it be a serious thing that needs to be addressed, because you're making the idea of
storyline. That's the like serious storyline that threads through all of the episodes. I'm not saying let's make it a slapstick comedy. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, imagine all of these people being like, you are the chosen one. And he being like, I just need to go to the bathroom.
I just got to use the bathroom.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, like, you must wear. And he's just like, no, I'm cool with this general thing. So bye.
I think that there's something cool about making him a person of heightened interest within the greater Mandalorian world, because like Bo-Katan is going to have rough feelings towards him, even though he's like, just take it. Like, can I give this to Gideon again? And then can you kick the shit out of Gideon and then like take it from him? Can we do it that way? And she's like, no, I really do have to kick your ass. It's like, well then just beat me up. You know, like, there's a lot of comedy in this.
More faith that defeated in battle means that the person must die?
I don't know if you have to die or if you just need to get your shit wrecked. you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't make up the rules. I have no idea.
Because I don't know the lore of Mandalore.
But I think what's cool here potentially is like he is what they called earlier in the season, a child of the watch, right? Like he's part of like a Mandalorian mm-hmm. separatist cult, basically, that he descends from Death Watch. And we didn't see the armor all season long. And we didn't see any of the people that he knew from back in the day, back in season one, all season long. So if we're going to get into like new Mandalorian Civil War type territory, he becomes a very central player in that now. He becomes a person of interest, and he is like the least interested in this. Like this dude could not be less interested in all of that. I think that there are, yeah, is it well worn? It is, but I think that it's still an opportunity to tell good stories, if they're well written, if the dialogue is sharp, if the acting is good, if the set pieces are great. It's familiar territory. I do not dispute that, but I think that it can be done well. It is just really important, I think, like if they ever take their eye off the ball of like Din suddenly like, no, I was born for this, I am meant to be, like that's gonna be kind of trash unless they do it really, really, really well. But I'd be very nervous if we got into that territory.
Even the alternative is still like, I think, again, rehash and rethread of just kind of like, oh man, he really doesn't want anything to do with this, and he'll learn the importance of his people in some way, and the importance that they need a different type of ruler, one who's more familiar with them, like Bo-Katan, and then she'll become the ruler. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm sure they could do interesting stories. Like, again, they haven't not done that yet, but I'm, you know, it's just,
yeah,
I just doubt it. There's certain storylines where I don't care how good you are, I'm just like, you can't really, you're not going to really do anything new or interesting
just,
here.
Yeah, you're just Meryl Streep in Doubt. It's okay. It's fine.
Was she just okay in that? I didn't see Doubt.
She was good, and Amy Adams is in Doubt. Philip Seymour Hoffman is in Doubt, but Viola Davis was on the screen. I was talking to Zed about this today, actually. Viola Davis, whom I love and want her to be part of my family, actually, was on the screen for like 7 to 10 minutes of this movie. And she destroyed Meryl. Like, she just...
she won the saber.
She just out-acted Meryl and all of that. She was the winner of the dark saber, and she just left, and we never saw her again. Yeah. Like, that's what happened in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that was her quote-unquote big break, because she got to have 10 minutes in an all-white film.
Yeah.
But it worked so well, because she harnessed all of what that should make you feel, and she was just like, I'm going to destroy Meryl Streep.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So, yeah, just watch Doubt, everybody.
No doubt.
It's a good film.
I get it, Kevin. Like, I get the concern. I do. I don't think that
they're
anything
well-founded.
Yeah.
So. But I maybe, you know, they get new blood in there, like different kinds of writers, different kinds of directors, and you don't know what you get. Maybe this thing is settled with the Darksaber in like the third episode and something else.
You don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
But season three, the Mandalorians. You know, let's bring a bunch of them in. Let's have a great time. It'll be fun. Multiple Mandalorians. Evan, you all right? You okay? No?
I mean, if we're going an alien to aliens route, I guess that's an improvement, right? But no, it's just, look, because at the end of the season, right, like a season ender generally has to be like, okay, we need to get you excited for the next season. And just for me, like the idea, and like, yes, it could be good. Yes, we could have it over in three episodes. But as far as like an ending capper of what the potential storyline, the direction the series could go in terms of getting me excited, it does not. Like, it's just that, and I get it. It can be done well, but where we are now at this particular moment, the prospect of the next season of Mandalore is that the Mandalore, like Din Djarin, has the Darksaber, and there's a struggle for a throne again. I'm just like, cool. It doesn't interest me as much as the ending of episode one did, where it's just like, oh, it's gonna be him and this little baby. Like, that was interesting. But and again, mileage may vary. But for me, I have seen this. We have been here before. We are going in circles. That's sort of where I am on it.
That's just a lot. Do we like the Latina? Did you like the Dark Troopers? Did you think they were cool?
I thought the fight between, we haven't really even talked about the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The Peyton fight Reed between... directed this.
Yes.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Very own Kevin. Peyton Reed directed this episode.
I know. I saw that. And again, like, I have said he's a very good director.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I'm just pointing it out. I didn't say anything, Kevin. I'm not attacking you.
Wow. Okay. I should have never mentioned this friendship thing.
It's gotten
tense. Well, Josh said friendships end this year.
It's gotten tense. Yeah, but not with you, I didn't think.
I don't want it to end, Josh.
Kevin. We're back.
I don't want to go.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about the action. Latanya, bring us back.
Yeah. For the love of Pete. Buttigieg. Yeah.
Now it's Buttigieg. Sorry.
Continue. Yeah, they were fantastic. That one that got through and had the fight with Mando, that was a wonderful like action set piece. I thought that they were badass, and I was just like, what are they going to do? This is terrifying. I agree with Moff Gideon, the F-boy, that like we need to get out of here immediately because we're all going to die. I don't have a plan for it, but we have to go because I have commanded them to kill everyone. It was intense. And there were a lot of moments where you know, it's hard to fear for the Mandalorian on the show called The Mandalorian, but like, you know, the best kinds of, action set pieces with the main character are the ones that make you think they're in actual peril.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was great. We didn't talk about the Mando, Moff Gideon fight. Much either.
I thought that one was fine, to be honest. I didn't love it.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I thought, because like, I think I was a little thrown off, and if either of you can talk me into being a fan of this, like, I think like Gideon, so there's a certain amount of like expo dump that has to happen here for like people who didn't watch Clone Wars and Rebels and don't, or didn't do like the wiki deep dives to like understand like the lore behind and the importance of the Darksaber and everything. And I get that. And maybe there are ways that could have been done better, but I'm not going to workshop it, whatever. that like, I understand like the necessity of conveying some of that information in this moment. But I did like think like Gideon's whole thing of like being with Grogu and Mando showing up and Gideon basically being like, sup? So, you just want the kid? And then we're cool. And then like Mando like forging that deal. And the second he reached for Grogu, like that's the moment Gideon decides like it just like, it felt a little McClunky to me. I also that's do want fair. To note that, I believe Bib Fortuna says the word McClunky.
Yes, he does.
I don't think that we've talked about that enough as a culture.
Like he does, and it's horrifying.
It's great. I loved it. McClunky.
You loved forever. It?
McClunky. Love it. Bring it. McClunky is wonderful. I thought that the fight was a little McClunky for me between Gideon and Din.
Okay. Don't associate this fight with that word. Like, I mean, come on. Yes. It's contrived. It's the evil genius doing the like speechifying and then like, oh, I tricked you. it's trite and it's been done a million times, but the actual fight itself, I thought was great. and I was really into it and I'm not really sure why I loved it so much, but I don't know. There's something about the idea and I know it's not even them fighting. It's like they're stunt people who are doing it of these two people like fighting and Mando like finally being able to like use his Beskar in like the best protective way. Being super cool. And I thought that the fact that he had the spear of Beskar was also really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of in between here, right? Like, I thought it was a pretty good fight. Again, just seeing the use of Darksaber, I think was cool. Just any sort of lightsaber gets me excited, I guess. so like that part was really fun. Yes, Pedro Pascal using a spear again was very exciting. Although he did make the fatal flaw of leaving his enemy alive again, you think he'd learn. But I will say, you know, to the extent of like, yeah, the twist of like, aha, I'm going to attack you now. I mean, it is a type of F-boy move though, right? So if it's the version of Gulf Gideon that we're leaning into right now.
Yeah.
That said, I do think, you know, just to swing everything back around, what I do think could have been more interesting is if Gideon held his end of the plan. You let me walk, you take the kid.
Yes.
Because then what happens?
I agree.
He walks, he leaves the Darksaber.
Yeah.
Jin has to go back and tell Bo-Katan, I had to let him go for the kid. That's a conflict between them that is interesting and unique and a little bit different because he had to make that choice for the kid. So what happens? Like, is it super duper unique? No. But could it lead to a conflict that feels more natural and interesting? Yes. Instead, yeah. It has to like, well, because of tradition, I cannot take the saber from you. Okay, right. Cool. I'm glad that like every culture in the world takes 2,000 years ago tradition and be like, well, we've learned nothing in 2,000 years and the world hasn't changed. So we'll just keep that tradition running. Like, this just
Don't like the people saying she just needs to like calm down and like accept it, her fate. You know, I get why she would feel this way. I get why she would be upset that this is happening and be like, I've worked harder than you all have seen because it's been off screen to get this. And now it's just suddenly this dude's. Come on. And it's maybe not about her being unwilling to or like having too much pride. It's about being able to rule your people, knowing that they live by this certain tradition. And then and then maybe you can change that later, but they would never accept you as a legitimate leader if you had not done this. It's not just about her. She's considering her people as well.
Can't everyone in that room, though, just like totally agree? Like, let's just like lock it down.
Mm-hmm.
Bo-Katan kicked the shit out of Moff Gideon. We're all cool with that, right? No one's kind of like deep. Like,
no one's upset with that.
Like, we're good with that, right? And like everyone signs off and then she gets it. That's what
I mean, that could have happened. All make a pact right now.
More writing could have occurred.
Yeah. Listen, everybody, let's just take a quick beat to say, like, I'm not going to go out of this room and say anything other than Bo-Katan kicked the shit out of Moff Gideon. She gets the Darksaber. We're all cool with that. And Cara Dune's like, yeah, whatever.
Except Moff Gideon might be like, I'm not. And it's just
and then
right,
they kill him.
Just put like a Bacta thing on his mouth so he can't talk or whatever. I don't know what happens. I'm sorry.
We don't trust him. I'll say the best part of the Din and Gideon fight was when they returned to the bridge. And the only time I screamed louder than Luke Skywalker's arrival in this episode was Mando showing up on the bridge wielding the Darksaber and knowing that Kevin Mahadeo owes me a damn egg sandwich.
I do.
I screamed so loud. I was so pumped.
Should I Venmo you right now? Should I just send you this thing?
Yeah, you should.
I'm also sad that I lost, but I'm also like, jealous because like New York Edge Sandwich is just a thing I haven't had.
They're so good. I mean, Harley Quinn did an entire like montage about it. That's how good they are.
They're good. They're very good. I look forward to eating it. There's still so much from not just the finale, but the season overall to discuss. I'm very glad that we have next week to do that. So get your takes in. StarWarsAtPostShowRecaps.com. Send us your emails. Send us your feedback. Join us on the Discord. Very lively conversations, specifically in the Star Wars channel in the Discord. Patreon.com/PostShowRecaps if you want to be a part of that. We're going to come back next week. We're going to talk this through even more. We'll process so much between now and then. We'll have hopefully some more information, too, about the future of the series. Maybe. I believe that there is going to be another Disney Gallery episode that's going to be a behind the scenes on Mandalorian season 2. I believe that's dropping in the next few days. So that'll be great to have some information from that to inform the conversation moving forward. But we are not done yet with Mando season 2. We'll be back next week with more. Any final thoughts before we continue the conversation next week, LaTanya?
Give me back my baby. He's so cute.
Kevin, I would like to thank you. I've just received your Venmo for the egg. It's official. It's official.
I hope you're happy.
I
hope you're very proud of yourself.
Kevin, you accepted my terms last week for the shift. Never mess with a Wigglarian when eggs are on the line.
You didn't read the fine print. And I was not around to like semi-lawyer.
Walk you down to talk you off the ledge. Yeah.
It's okay. You know, I'm back now.
Kevin, any final thoughts before we close out?
No, I mean, we'll get into anything next week where people maybe yell at me in the feedback.
It won't be me. I'll never yell at you. You're my friend.
I'll yell at you. You're my friend, but yes. I will also yell at you.
Thanks. I really like this, you know, episode. I really love Luke Skywalker showing up. But I will say, more than anything else, my biggest gripe was the Darksaber stuff, but whatevs. But yeah, I'm interested to talk about the season as a whole, because I think, again, like, I'm double conflicted, where I feel like the season was awesome and so exciting, so cool. But then there's other parts where I'm just like, but yeah.
We'll talk future stuff too. I think will be fun. Let's spend some time in the week in between doing some mental gymnastics of like forecasting, like what does this stuff look like? And we can map it onto some of the Star Wars plans that have been announced. We'll go over that again in terms of all the shows that are supposedly coming up. Maybe we can make a list of where we think Grogu will, he's like, where's Waldo? Where will you find Grogu next? I know.
Deeply embedded in my heart.
All right. We'll be back next week with more Mando. So much happening on post-show recaps, whether it's on the main feed or the patron feed. Kevin and I are talking about Into the Spider-Verse this week. That podcast is dropping this week. I have a special bonus Antonio Mazzaro podcast coming out later this week. It is about a topic that I never expected to podcast about, and it's kind of random, but there's a reason behind it, and it's worth listening to the podcast once it drops. Down the Hatch is getting into the penultimate episode of season 3 of Lost. That's very exciting. And the Aang in there, gang. Avatar The Last Airbender is already at the season 1 finale, so congratulations to Zach and Jacob. Wrapping that up this week. Really, really exciting.
Hang in there. Great job.
Rumor has it that there may be some future Avatar shenanigans coming up not terribly long from now. So looking forward to all of that. We'll be back next week with more Mando. But for now, we have spoken.